Hi there, and welcome to the 5th Annual Transforming Toddlerhood Conference. I'm so happy you're here with us today. I'm Devin Koonsman, your host, toddler expert, and founder of Transforming Toddlerhood. I'm on a mission to dispel the myth that toddlerhood is terrible and empower parents and caregivers in overcoming the challenges of toddlerhood, nurturing their child's development, and creating confidence in their parenting skills. And that's exactly what we're here to do today. And I am just so excited to be here with Dr. Asharina Rehm, clinical psychologist and certified perinatal mental health specialist. Welcome, Dr. Rehm.
Thank you for having me.
Oh, I'm just so excited you're here. You know, I love meeting an Instagram buddy virtually. So this is just so fun to be here today and talk to you. And there may be some people in our audience that aren't familiar with you and your work. So could you just tell us a little bit more about yourself?
Yeah. So just like you said, I'm a psychologist. I specialize in perinatal mental health. I primarily see parents, whether it's through the fertility challenges, through during pregnancy, postpartum, and beyond. And I came to this field after my own very challenging postpartum experience. So this is a passion of mine to support parents along this really monumental transition in their lives.
Yeah, it's such important work. I'm so thankful you're out there doing this work. I would just love to ask you to start us off. What do you feel makes toddlerhood a challenging and oftentimes misunderstood developmental period for the parents out there?
Oh my goodness. What isn't there that we need to cover here? There are so many cultural messages about how children should behave. I know this personally and professionally, what we think children should do, how they should interact and respond. I think a lot of our ideas and myths about how children should behave bring to light our own personal vulnerabilities as parents, maybe how we were responded to as children, or how the myths that we were taught over time and the messages we continue to hear about how we should parent, how our children should behave. And it's a lot to take on as parents. It's a challenge to try to decipher what is the best way to approach things and what is an accurate description of what children should look like or how they should behave. There's so much that goes on there. But when we think about triggering behavior in our children, it brings about these big emotions in parents due to our own difficulty tolerating their emotions and providing a holding environment for them. So given that it is so hard to be with our children when they are having a hard time navigating their own emotional experience, I think many parents personalize this and there's a lot of shame associated with this. So there's a number of things that contribute to how we misunderstand the developmental period, developmental period.
Yeah. Well, I mean, what you're saying is just so spot on because toddlers spend a lot of their life in their lower brain in this developmental period. This is where they spend a lot of time because, well, this is the part of the brain that is more developed at this point. And this is in their emotions and the fear and the getting their needs met and the stress response. And so it's really hard not to join a little one in that place whenever you're mm-hmm. faced with it multiple times a day.
Yes. It's like we are, it's really hard not to become this emotional sponge as a parent and take on the emotional experience of our children, not to personalize it. I mean, you will hear stuff all day long, right? This is manipulation, or they are doing this on purpose, whatever the case may be, whatever the messages that we receive from around us. So it's really challenging to be in the midst of someone that is dysregulated and trying to remain calm. And I can attest to this as a parent myself. It is a practice and it is constantly reminding myself, okay, this is not intentional. My child is not trying to frustrate me. This is just really challenging for both of us.
Yes. Yes. Oh, I always call it a practice. I always say practice makes progress, not perfection. You know, we always grew, I mean, at least I always say we, but I mean, maybe other people didn't grow up hearing this, but I grew up hearing practice makes perfect, you know, playing the piano, practice makes perfect, and horseback riding lessons, preparing for shows. And I'm like, wait a minute, we have to rewrite the script on this, which is actually a great intro into what we're talking about today, which is parental burnout. And I was just saying before we started recording, one of my best performing posts on Instagram this year was about burnout and self-care. And that is really alarming. And so what we are here today to talk a little bit more about what burnout is and how to overcome it and prevent it. So just to start us off, could you tell us, what does parental burnout even mean?
Mm-hmm. So there are four primary tenets of parental burnout. I mean, honestly, when we say burnout, people get like their ears perk up because it sounds like something that could be related or of interest to them. And it just like you said, for the work that I do, this is one of the biggest pain points that people come to me and say, I feel like I am depleted. And so the four tenets of burnout are this, the physical and emotional exhaustion. And as a parent, it feels like I have nothing else to give. And the idea of waking up to parent for an entire day, or, you know, meeting the demands of parenthood feels and sounds just like it's impossible. So there is this physical and emotional exhaustion. And then there's this sense of detachment from our children, where we just don't feel like we can connect or we can show up or attune to them because we are so depleted. And what our children are doing or saying or showing us just feels like it is of little interest to us. Another thing that shows up in burnout is that we feel a loss of competence or pleasure in the parenting role, where now not only are we feeling detached, not only are we exhausted, but we just feel like I am not cut out for this. I am not the parent I should be. And this is no longer fun. And the fourth piece to this is that these three tenets of burnout are a change in behavior. You didn't always feel this way, but you're noticing that you're drifting further away from yourself and you're overwhelmed. And like I said, you're stretched far too thin.
Yeah. Thanks for pointing that out. And I just want to say to any parents and caregivers who are listening and they're thinking, oh my goodness, this is sounding familiar, or like they see maybe some red flags popping up for themselves, I just want to say that first of all, you're in the right place. We're here to support you. And second of all, this doesn't mean that you're a bad parent or failing as a parent. And I think this is one of the main things that come up, at least what I see in my Instagram and within Transforming Toddlerhood and my own coaching practice. I'm curious, Dr. Rehm, would you say that you see something similar?
Yes. Burnout is such a big piece of the work I do. And I do see parents feel bad about this experience. And I'm just echoing what you said is like, this is not a product of you as a parent. It is really a systemic issue where we're looking at the increasing demands on parents and the limited supports for parents. So it's bigger than each of us individually. So yeah, it is challenging. And it is one of the biggest things that is coming up in my practice repeatedly.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it's great that we're having this conversation today. And what would you say for parents and caregivers who are just learning, like, oh my gosh, there's a name for this. Like, I'm feeling burnout. Like what causes burnout? What kind of leads to getting to this place?
There is so much that can contribute to burnout. And when we think about burnout, like, the idea of parental burnout seems silly because we've learned of it as kind of like something that's work-related, you know, as a parent myself, I've always thought of it like, oh, this is for people that travel for work or work long hours in healthcare systems. You know, it's not for parents. Like, why would parents experience this? But you wouldn't believe how many parents do. And it is due to our prolonged exposure to chronic stress. So what does that even mean? I mean, as parents, let's think about all of the stressors in our daily lives. And it's this chronic activation of the stress response cycle. I don't know how familiar you are with the stress response cycle, but it's a system in our body that is adaptive. It's needed. And it's been a part of our body forever from, you know, its initial existence. And it's where we are in a place of obviously survival. We need a stress response cycle that tells us whether we should fight or flee. But this becomes chronically activated today as parents, whether it's overstimulation, whether it's the demands of child rearing or the impossible tasks of the parental load in your home or your job demands, whatever it is that's piling on you, this is activating the stress response cycle in your body. The issue becomes is that if you were, for example, you know, running in the woods and an animal is chasing you, you are expending some energy doing that, right? When we are activating this as parents, we're not finishing the stress response cycle. We are not expending the energy. So there is this big buildup of these stress hormones in our body and they have nowhere to go. So we crash and burn and we continue to feel unsafe. We continue to feel dysregulated. And this is where we don't feel like anything that we're doing is helping us replenish or gain any energy.
Yeah. I love this. And this, like thinking about the idea that, okay, it's typical of being a human being that you're going to have a stress response. It's going to get triggered, but this thought of it being continuously triggered in this space that you're not able to like complete the stress response cycle. So it just is building up until, well, you know, we either just crash or explode.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah. And you'll see that with parents. Burnout tends to be this risk factor for rage and anger because when we don't have the resources, we are going from a place of running on empty. And that's what we'll find is that a lot of parents, these two go hand in hand. I'm burned out and I find myself losing my temper and I'm really frustrated because my needs are not being met and I'm not being able to refill this cup that I'm pouring from every day.
Yeah. Yeah. So true. And I'm thinking about, your answer to like the first question you mentioned, you know, there's a lot of myths and parenting myths out there. And I'm just curious thinking about like, you know, this idea of that society has a lot of ideas of how parents should go, how kids should behave, all these things. Like, what would you say are some parenting myths that really perpetuate the cycle of burnout or that create burnout?
Oh my goodness. There are so many. And I think part of this goes into the idea of like intensive, particularly mothering. We find this a more commonplace for mothers. And it's that parents should be the, you know all, do all, they should be doing more. There's a sense of perfectionism in parenting today. The pressures are mounting. And a modern parenthood, the demands are increased. There's social comparison. We have social media. We have all these idealized perspectives of what parents should be doing that just put more pressure on parents. So where they feel like they might even potentially be doing a good enough job, there's all these voices around them that tell them that they should be doing more. I should be, you know, cooking a home cooked meal every day. I should be limiting screen time to X amount of minutes. I should be exposing my kids to all these experiences. I should be giving more and doing more. And the list goes on. And when we think about all these expectations that we place on parents, they're so unrealistic. They're so far-fetched. And it's this perfectionistic parenting idea that none of us are meeting. So when we have these expectations that are so high and we are executing, you know, far lower than this expectation, we are leaving such a large space for disappointment and grief and shame because we don't feel like we are doing a good enough job.
Yeah, gosh. I mean, this is just a whole nother topic that's just and so important and so pervasive throughout life. And social media is definitely a huge driver of this. And, you know, one thing I always say to parents and caregivers, first of all, is that it's okay to learn alongside your little one. And also, sometimes I feel like that it's like human nature in a way to want to try something once or twice and then like get like fast forward to the end result. So basically jump from like A to Z in like one fell swoop. And we just don't, as humans, really have a lot of capacity for delayed gratification in that respect, especially if we're already feeling worn down. And when that comes to parenting, it's just like, gosh, there's a certain behavior happening. We don't understand why it's happening. And then we're getting triggered by it. And we want it to stop. And then we try to use some type of discipline and it doesn't really make it stop. It keeps popping up. And then we're thinking, oh my gosh, I'm failing at this. And it just becomes this vicious cycle of like wanting to get to the outcome that we envision right away. And if we didn't measure up to that outcome, or our children didn't measure up to that outcome, then there's something wrong, or we're doing something wrong. Someone's wrong mm-hmm. in this scenario.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, I'd love to ask you, what are some of the things, are there other like risk factors or vulnerabilities that really expose parents to the potential become burnout?
Yes, there are so many. And some of them might be really straightforward and expected, and others might not be. But having a lower financial resources, being a younger parent, having younger children, or having multiple younger children, being a mother automatically puts you at risk for burnout, because mothers tend to bear more of the child rearing and household responsibilities. Being a single parent, having a blended family, being isolated and having limited supports. There are so many things. I do find that one of the biggest things for burnout is having a child with a disability or a complex medical need, or a lot of the other things that can contribute are the way that we see ourselves and that idealized parent that we talked about that wants to be super mom or super dad, or wants to be perfectionistic and really strives to be perfectionistic. So there are some internal things that'll be risk factors. There are some situational things that you can't escape, obviously. So it's really challenging when a number of those vulnerability factors are things that are outside of your control, because that can feel defeating, but it's not. And I always tell parents that we work to combat some of those and kind of like have a snowball effect on them by changing some of the things that we do have a sense of agency over, and we can make a positive impact towards that, like accumulation of risk factors.
Yeah. Yeah. That's great to hear, because when I hear you like naming off everything on this list, I just find myself thinking like, wow, like none of us are immune to stress. Right. And
yeah. So the risk factors, and like you said, no one is immune, and burnout impacts nearly all parents to some degree. So it can be very challenging and it can be discouraging, but there are definitely tools and resources that we can adopt to improve this.
Oh, that's awesome. Well, before we dive into those tools and resources, tell us a little bit more about what happens if we just leave burnout unaddressed. Like, what's the impact of that in parenting and in life?
There are so many negative impacts if we leave this to go unaddressed. We can imagine, right? But the one thing that we find in my practice is that this can snowball into depression or another mental health condition, because you are starting to feel a sense of helplessness or hopelessness. We are also seeing that it can result in a lot of physical changes. And a lot of the parents that come in with this chronic parental burnout are starting to notice, you know, I'm experiencing headaches or chest tightness, stomach aches, nausea, my hair is falling out. And they're reporting a lot of physical changes in their body, like fatigue. And they don't know why, but when we are assessing this and we're exploring what's going on, you know, having the presence of this stress hormone accumulate in your body for such a long time can be detrimental, and not just to your physical health and not just to your mental health, but also to your relationships. If we don't address parental burnout, we notice that there is a negative impact on that parent-child relationship. It is harder to become attuned to your child's needs when you're not feeling like yourself. You're less responsive. You might parent more harshly. And it's not just affecting that parent-child relationship, but also your relationship with your partner. You just feel disconnected. There are a number of ways that this is going to impact pretty much every area of life if it's not addressed.
Yeah. I mean, I can see how it can just kind of be like a ripple effect throughout all areas of life.
Yes.
And you'd also mentioned that it's before a risk factor for rage. Can you explain a little bit more about that?
Yes. So when we are completely depleted in our needs aren't being met, this is actually a risk factor for feelings of rage anyway. So when we're burned out, we think of it as like our threshold is decreasing, right? And it takes very little to get to that place of anger and rage. And anger and stress are wired in our body very similarly. They activate the same stress response cycle. So as this threshold decreases, that kind of gateway to feeling more angry and irritable is easily activated. It takes very little for us to get there.
Interesting. Yeah, I can see that from like, I'm thinking about like from a logical aspect, but I even think of it from experiential aspect. I mean, just in general in life, like the more stressed I'm feeling, the more easily I'm going to snap at just really anyone in my path, you know?
Yes. Yeah. So it's like why, when we talk about like vulnerabilities before making a big decision or having a serious conversation, it's like to make sure that our basic needs are met, because when we are not coming from a place of being nurtured, whether it's physically, emotionally, or whatever it may be, we are very vulnerable to unwanted behavior.
Got it. Yeah. Well, what would you say are some of the main tools and skills that parents can use if they find themselves like, oh my gosh, yes, I'm feeling burnout. Yes, I was feeling burnout a month ago, 6 months ago. The pandemic has just taken any reserve I have left. You know, what are some ways that parents can start moving through the burnout and overcoming it?
This is the magic question, right? This is the million-dollar question. So one of the answers, when we talk about, we started off talking about the stress response cycle and this accumulation of stress in our bodies. And as you can imagine, one of the most effective way to address this is through moving our body. And it's how we can reduce stress and tension in our body. It encourages blood flow. It expends all that extra energy. It gets us breathing deeper, which can then trigger relaxation in the body. So finding some kind of movement to deal with that physical response that's happening in our body is very important. And doing this regularly, most people don't want to hear that, but this is true. We need to work to expend this energy and make space for ourselves to be able to use skills. So how do we address burnout? Obviously, it's like I said, it's a systematic problem where we can try to manage as best as we can what's happening for ourselves internally. But there are other things that we can do in our community, within our family system, that really disrupts the system that's encouraging burnout. But for ourselves, I think of it as the three S's. And this is something that I talk about repeatedly, where we think of space or time for ourselves. As parents, we are taking in so much sensory information all day long, from the moment we wake up to the moment we go to bed, and even while we're sleeping. We are being inundated with sensory input. And if we don't have that space, and I'm not talking about like 2 to 3 hours of alone time to process this information, but if we don't even have 15 minutes to really digest this information, to process it, then we're not giving our body the space it needs to do that. And we're going to feel overwhelmed. So I like to create margin in our time. And one of the tools that I review is the time management skill. And it's to really reflect on what we're doing throughout our day, every single minute being accounted for, to see, are we good managers of our time? Most of us think we are. I'm not always a good manager of my time. I know that I do things throughout my day that are not benefiting my mental health because they're overloading myself. They are not encouraging margin or space. So it's really good to take an inventory of these things. Another thing is support. And not all of us have this access to tons of supportive people, but it's to rely on those couple of people that are impactful. And I don't mean that they need to come over and take over for us, although that would be awesome. But it's just even having that person that you can connect with or make a phone call to and have an emotional connection and tell them, hey, I am stressed out. It feels good to our body when we verbalize what it is that we're carrying, and being able to share that with somebody that is non-judgmental and able to hold space for us. The third thing is being self-compassionate. And this is probably the most important thing that we can talk about. People don't recognize that when we are self-critical, when we talk to ourselves in a negative way and say things like, I'm doing a terrible job, or my children deserve better, we are activating the stress response cycle in our body. We are releasing neurochemicals that are increasing stress in our body. And it's not just this, you know, woo-woo concept that speak kindly to yourself. This has been researched. And we know that when we speak to ourselves kindly and compassionately, and we offer support, that it helps to increase oxytocin in our body, our hormones of love and connection. And it is a practice that really is missing for a lot of parents because we are wired to just be so negative and so self-deprecating. It's kind of our reflex. So it's something that we really work to avoid doing.
Yeah. Yeah. Or, and I think like maybe, gosh, this avoidance is even on like a subconscious level, right? Because we can get just so stuck in the narrative. And I mean, even earlier today, I was like having trouble focusing. I just felt like I had so many things I wanted to do today and I didn't get many of them done. And I found myself saying like, gosh, you sure didn't get much done today. You've really been unfocused. And then I actually caught myself for once and I was like, oh, you didn't do as much as you expected. That's okay. We all have days like this. Well, I did do this, but I'm like, wow, this has been years of work in progress. And I caught myself in the middle of it and turned that dialogue around. But I mean, it's a challenge, right? Because it happens, I think, a lot unconsciously as well. Like we don't catch ourselves until who knows when, if we're not even aware of it.
Absolutely. And it's like, it becomes that, you know, that cassette tape. I always use this example, but no one's using cassette tapes anymore, but it's just that cassette tape that's going on and on and on in the background in our brain. And unless we're, you know, capturing those thoughts and saying like, okay, this might not be the most helpful here. Nothing is going to change. And we're not going to feel good.
Yeah. Yeah. And this seems like a good time to throw out there that Kristen Neff is like the self-compassion, the compassion expert here in the world. And I don't believe she has her own podcast, but she's sure on other people's podcasts, done TEDx speeches and has books. And I'm a huge fan of her work. And I found that just, you know, sometimes listening to her work, even for 10 or 15 minutes or, you know, fitting in parts of a podcast here and there, really has helped me cultivate more space for self-compassion.
Yes. This is actually one of the books. Self-compassion is one of the books that I recommend to just about every single therapy client I've ever met with. It's the reading. It's like an assigned reading and we go through the chapters together, but there are activities that she offers in her book. And she actually just released a new book. I believe it's called Fierce Self-Compassion. That's incredible. And it's so needed because as people, as parents, the self-criticism is everywhere. It's pervasive.
Yeah. Yeah. And I love that you've kind of broken it down to like three buckets we can look at to start kind of shifting the direction the ship's going in terms of a burnout, the space and time, the support and self-compassion. And you know, when it comes to space and time, I just find myself thinking like our relationship with time is such an interesting thing. And another area that I've been trying to support myself with and, you know, through my support systems is changing my narrative around time from, I don't have enough time to, like, this is my default setting as like a high achiever and just doing a lot of things, to how can I create time for blank, or, you know, or even thinking, what do I want? What's important for me to spend my time on? And even like tracking, like you said, tracking time, I was astounded one day when I started tracking the amount of time I spent working versus like all the interruptions, like, you know, 15 minutes on social media, 10 minutes on Amazon, you know, whatever. And I started to realize, oh, I actually didn't work all those hours in my head. I was saying like, oh, I've been here all day at this desk, you know?
Mm-hmm. I didn't realize that either until I started putting together the work that I do for burnout and accounting for my time and managing that time and realizing how much of it is wasted doing things that are not fulfilling, but they're actually depleting. Being on social media isn't always a nourishing activity. It can be if you're plugged in with the right accounts and you're, you know, only viewing things that are helpful and informative and, you know, positive. But we find, like for myself as well, it's like shopping or scrolling and things that don't matter to me every day, but I could be doing something for myself that really refills that bucket. And I feel more connected to who I am as a parent, as a person, as a professional.
Yeah. Yeah. I love this. And earlier you had mentioned like, in talking about this idea of like the shoulds, like the should storm, I should be doing this, I should be doing that, all the shoulds just piling up. I'm curious what you see as a shift there. Like if we want to look at shifting the narrative from the shoulds, mm-hmm. can you speak to like, well, what would we shift to, or how can we shift out of like the assault of the shoulds?
Yes. I really am a firm believer in like documenting our narrative, documenting what the thoughts are, capturing what they are. And we don't tend to know, like I ask clients this all the time, you know, what are some of your thought patterns that you're having throughout the day? I don't know. I don't have a clue. And then when we tune into what were you feeling throughout the day? And we capture that feeling, we see the string of thoughts that are attached to that feeling. And most of the time there are the shoulds, right? You're shoulding all over yourself as a therapy joke. And we really look to see like, what does that even say? We assess and we evaluate the should. What is this based in? What kind of rule? When I say I should be doing more, let's evaluate that. What is that telling me? It tells me that I should be like completely productive as a parent. I should be, you know, striving and doing. Is there any room for compassion in these statements? And I always talk about how we turn our shoulds into compassion and how we address ourselves like a person that we really care about. And how would we talk to that person? You know, how would we comfort that person? So we actively comfort ourselves. And this is something I work on consistently in pretty much everything that I work with parents is, okay, I am having a hard time right now acknowledging that, just like you mentioned. But we acknowledge the discomfort, we acknowledge the challenge, and we sit with that and we say, okay, what do I need right now? This is hard for me. That might be emotional work, because when we really acknowledge the pain and the suffering that we are experiencing and then turning into what do I need right now? Goodness, I can unravel, right? If I really tune into that. So we really work on this. As I work with parents repeatedly, we just go over tuning into my own personal need instead of the shoulds of what I should be doing. What is it that I need? How can I comfort myself? How can I support myself? And the aha questions, like, how can I be a better friend to myself? Because most of the time I am not a good friend to myself. I am like the enemy of myself. So how can I be a better friend to myself? And really reflecting on some of these questions that activate some of that self-compassion, and we'll see a shift in the way that we're thinking and the way that we are feeling too.
Yeah. Yeah. I really love that. And something else that you said earlier that really struck a chord with me was this idea of nurture. And so I'm curious what you would say in terms of what are some ways that parents and caregivers can really start to nurture their physical and emotional health and needs? Like what might that look like in very like, you know, to start out in like very small, tangible ways?
This is a great question. And nurturing ourselves is something that culturally we are not seeing as a high on the priority list. Parenting has become such a, like an others focused job. It's a self-sacrifice, and we have really worn with the badge of honor, like that selflessness of motherhood or as parents. So turning this back into myself and acknowledging that I do have needs is one of the things. So I always like to do, especially when we're looking at like that time management routine, it's like, well, okay, how much time was I actually spent doing something that feels good to me? And a nourishing activity is something that makes you feel more like yourself. It doesn't have to be anything crazy. I think people like really genuinely think that when I say this, I mean that you've got to be like doing 2 hours of self-development, which is awesome. If you can do it and you have the time for it, that's incredible. But really it's doing those little things that make you feel more connected with yourself. You know, are you listening to music that you actually want to listen to, or is it music that your children want to listen to? Are you singing along with the music? Is that something that you used to do that made you feel alive or happy? Are you connecting with people because you genuinely want to connect with them? Are you connecting with them because it makes sense because of your families and how they come together and mesh well? Are you engaging in physical activities that make you feel stronger and more able? So it's just really about tuning into what am I doing throughout the day? Is there at least one thing that I'm doing that's pouring into my cup?
Yeah.
Placing that space for me margin. And most of the time, the answer is no. So we really have to be reflecting on that continuously.
Yeah. Yeah. That's so powerful. That's just taking that moment and just realizing that. And also, I just feel like once we take that moment a few times or those moments, it becomes easier, but it's kind of hard to rip off the Band-Aid to get started. But once I get a little bit of momentum, I'm like, yeah, yeah. And then I find like myself building on it and creating more and then like realizing like, yeah, this is totally doable. And I think sometimes we need to remind ourselves in the beginning when, you know, there's the shoulds and the time, the, you know, not enough time, all these barriers and obstacles start popping up, especially if you're in the midst of burnout, you know, this narrative is going to be very strong, just somehow reminding ourselves that there is something for us on the other side and just having like the courage and the someone to cheer us on to take that first few steps.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Yeah. What would you say in terms of preventing burnout? Is it preventable?
This is really hard. Like I said, because most of us that are experiencing burnout are kind of in a system that is committed to overwhelming parents. And I say that not to be discouraging, but to be realistic. There are a lot of things that are stacked against parents that are out of their control. So are there things that we can do to help decrease the impact of burnout or really combat burnout? Yeah, there definitely are, because there are some things that we do that exacerbate the experience, right? And setting boundaries with our time is one of the most important things we can do, and not overextending ourselves. We were talking about this before we jumped on this call, but not overextending ourselves, being very particular about our yeses, right? And knowing that every time we say yes to another thing, we are saying no to ourselves. We're saying no to our own desires and our own needs. And avoiding putting those impossible demands on ourselves. It's like, well, whose voice is this? And that's where we really want to evaluate, like, I'm going to do this or I'm going to do that. Well, whose voice is that? Is this my voice? Or is this somebody else that's saying that I should be doing this to be, you know, a good enough parent? Evaluating what those messages are and where they come from. And I do something, I'm trying to really be consistent with this, and it doesn't always work, but working with like some time blocking, you know, these are my hours for work, these are my hours for home. And since so many parents are working from home, really drawing that hard line and saying, okay, I need to create office hours, whether I work in my home or I'm working outside my home, there has to be some boundaries with when I am engaging in this work. The biggest issue I am finding with parents is that how readily accessible we've become. Everyone has access to us, whether it's our employees, whether it's our employers, whether it's our family, friends, everyone. It's like we need to instantly be responding or completing something. And if we create some boundaries, we realize that not everything has to be done 24 hours of the day. We are not working and being on 24 hours of the day. So really having those limits for ourselves and for other people. And like I said, changing that inner voice and turning that critical voice into one that's a little bit more self-compassionate. I think that when we are setting boundaries with the outside stuff and then setting boundaries with our internal voice, we're really setting a solid foundation on that we can overcome burnout and really resist.
Yeah. Yeah. This is so great. You've given us so many amazing ideas today from several different angles. And I'm sure there's some parents and caregivers out there listening that are thinking, first of all, they're so thankful that they decided to listen to this session and they're resonating with what we're saying here. And they might be thinking, well, what's the first step? Like, what's one thing I can do today? If I'm at the very beginning of my journey, I'm like, I recognize the burnout. I know it's time to take action. Like, what would you recommend is just a great first step that parents and caregivers could do today?
I think acknowledging that it's real, because our awareness and our insight into saying, okay, this is a real experience that I am living with and I'm living through is the first step. Most often I hear that parents are resistant to the idea of burnout. And it's kind of like, well, I'm just making this up in my head, or this isn't a real thing. I need to suck it up. But truly, when we acknowledge that it is real, because it is, they've been researching this for decades, that we acknowledge and accept that it's real, we can start to formulate like an action plan based on what we talked about today. We can start to say no, we can start to set the limits because we acknowledge that it's real.
Yeah, that's great. Awareness is always the first step, I say, to creating change. So we have to acknowledge it to be aware of it. So this is beautiful. I love this first step. And gosh, unfortunately, our time's coming to a close. I feel like there's so many more things we could talk about. And I guess we'll save that for another day. But I do know you have a gift that you'd like to offer our audience. Could you tell us more about that?
Yes. And since we were talking about burnout and self-compassion and how these two relate, I did want to offer a boundaries freebie. And I will walk you step by step through a lot of the topics that we discussed today. So if some things you're just like taking notes or you're like, wait, hey, I didn't get that, it'll all be covered in the freebie. And I will also offer a few exercises in the handout that'll help you develop that self-compassion and give you the scripts and activities that you need to kind of bolster those skills.
That is awesome. Thank you so much. I know that that's going to be so, so, so supportive for everyone in the audience. And is there anything else you want to just add? Any final thoughts or words about parenting burnout?
I really want parents to remember that this is not your fault. Like, you didn't cause it. This isn't your fault. There's a lot going on. There are a lot of demands on you as a parent. And it's going back to being a better friend to ourselves and knowing like, okay, this is something that is happening and there are strategies to really improve this. So there is light at the end of the tunnel.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Thanks for that reminder. That's so important. And where can everyone go to just learn more about you and your work if they want to continue this conversation?
So I am Psyched Mommy just about everywhere. My website is www.psychedmommy.com. And that is my handle on all social media platforms, on Instagram, Facebook, Pinterest, all of the places. That's where you'll find me.
That's awesome. Oh, well, thank you so much for being here today and for all the work that you're doing in the world and really sharing your wisdom with all of us here. I truly appreciate it.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me. This has been fun.
Oh, it's my pleasure. And before we go, I'd like to invite everyone to join the discussion thread for this session in the Transforming Toddlerhood Facebook group. We'd love to hear your thoughts, questions, and feedback. And don't forget to upgrade to the premium package so you can access the bonus materials and listen to this session and all the others again and again and share them with your parenting partner. All right. Well, have a beautiful day and we'll see you all again soon. Bye.
Bye.